It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast, we've got a busy 7 o'clock hour, a victorious 7 o'clock hour. We will have D'Amico Ryan's locker room speech in just a second. Take a listen to this. We'll do that. We'll go back and dig into some of the details of CJ putting on the cape at the end of the game and getting the Texans a game-winning touchdown. There were some unsung heroes, I think, on that drive that we will get to. And then we'll get to Acknowledge Me, where there will be some Texans in there. Got a little college football in there. Got a former Texans head coach in Acknowledge Me, believe it or not.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I haven't looked at the show prep, so I'm going to be surprised by all of
these. You're
going
to have fun listening to this. You're right with the audience right now.
Jim Mudd once told me that he thought the show would be best when he was our producer if I just was completely unprepared for every show.
There's something to that.
Yeah.
What do you mean, if?
Hey, Ben. Oh, you chime in now?
Ben talks once every...
What the hell is this all about?
Yeah, dude, Ben talks once every 2 months on the show, and he chose violence right now.
what the hell was that?
We need the jaws of life to get Ben on the show.
I hit by a stray. It's like I made it through the war, and then all of a sudden I got in an auto accident.
That's the canary in the coal mine right there.
My goodness.
All right, so we'll get to Acknowledge Me in about 15, 20 minutes as well. This is D'Amico Ryans in the locker room following yesterday's 24-20 win over the Jags.
Hey, great job, man. Hey, I talked about it last night. Whatever it take, whoever it take, however long it take, finish with the win. And that's what we did today. We wanted to finish the first month of the season 3-1, and we did that. All right? Great job. Great job. Great job across the board. Hey, we can be a really good team. Really good team if we all commit to doing the right things all the time, right? You see it, guy. We got to get out of our own way. Commit to doing the right things all the time, man. And see how good we can be when we get out of our own way. Y'all with me?
Sure.
All right, just a couple balls here, all right? What we got? Dare, big time, man. Dare, hey, great job, man. Great job. We needed it most. We needed it most. Great job. And I think he got the most yards in the first 4 weeks of a season. Nico Collins! Yeah, Nico! Great job, man. Keep balling, CJ again. Great job. Way to lead us. All right, offense, when we needed it most, guys. Way to go close it out. That's what we look like. That's how it should look every single time. Proud of y'all boys, man. Proud of you. Let's fix what we got to fix, and let's keep getting better, keep moving forward.
All right, so that was a great victory speech. D'Amico gets so fired up.
Yeah. No, and honestly, going back and watching the entire final drive, that's what you need to do right now. If you've got mixed feelings about, they played like crap the whole second half, and yeah, they were good on that last drive. Watch the final drive and just remember that's how it should look and can look.
Yep.
Because they did it with multiple different players. CJ had to do it with his legs a couple times. And after I went back and rewatched, I felt better about it. I felt like, all right, okay, let's remember. The offensive line pulled it together. Bobby Sloak did a great job with the pass calls. Nico was a huge part of that drive, but they also used Nico to open up other opportunities for others. So that part of it, going against the Jags defense that played more zone than they typically do, you know, like the thing that's been hard for the Texans to really operate against as efficiently, I don't want to make too much of one series, but that's how it really should look. It was just a masterful drive without any huge, huge highlight reel moments other than maybe the Dalton Schultz driving for the first down.
We'll get to all these. So
I'm so excited, Sean.
I know. I can tell. It's good. I like it.
I feel the negativity draining from my veins.
I like it a lot. Well, hold on, but keep the IV there real quickly here. Did it sound like D'Amico maybe was in the midst of the victory speech, really, 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 really trying to reinforce that, guys, we've got to do better here?
I don't know. Do not ignore, as multiple people pointed out to me.
He's imploring them to a man to do things. We need to do the right things all the time.
Multiple people said to me yesterday after the game, there's going to be another Jeff Van Gundy quote week, isn't it? Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Do not ignore in victory what you would otherwise address in defeat.
It is.
Yes. But I feel like I've played that record enough times, and I feel like D'Amico knows that too.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, and I don't know if people are going to get frustrated with that or not. The post-game show last night, we had the phone lines were jammed from the time Clint and I sat down in our chairs to the time we walked out of the studio. The phone lines were jammed the whole time. And I would say that it was 60-40, 65-35 maybe. The majority being, it's a win. I'll take the win.
Yeah.
It's ugly. They've got to fix these things. The remainder were people who were still like kind of legitimately angry that they're doing all these things, which I understand both sides.
I know that's how I was. I feel guilty sometimes after a victory. I do feel guilty about just not even really accepting the W. You know, sometimes it's harder to accept the W than the L when you just know that you know what somebody's capable of and you know the potential and they're just not following through on it. And CJ in his press conference, we can play the clip tomorrow, but he talked about the pastor that they had brought in for either Saturday or Wednesday Bible study, whatever it was. He talked about you got to get through the mud to get to the miracle. And he said, with us, it's been a lot of self-inflicted mud. Yeah,
mud.
They're slathering themselves with yellow mud. Like, they might as well walk. Larry, if you're going to wear colored gloves, wear yellow gloves.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and throw the flag on yourself, okay? The self-inflicted mud is what's so frustrating right now.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, honestly, it sounds weird to say, but the 35 to 40% that were angry, in a way, it's a compliment to the Texans.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That the expectations are where they are right now.
Right, you know?
So people are going to fan how they fan.
You see this? Look, I went to a school that had a lot of, it was hard to get into, and there's a lot of kids from fancy prep schools and stuff. A lot of kids that were A students in college, and then they get to that school, and they're like, whoa. What do you mean I'm a B student?
Yeah.
I'm a genius, aren't I?
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard emotionally.
Yeah.
And that's what you guys are now. You're like a kid that got 1400 on your SATs.
Right.
And yet you're getting the first B in your life, and it's an emotionally devastating.
That's right.
That's what it feels like with the Texans right now. It feels like they're capable of so much more, and yet they keep getting Bs and Cs.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
All right, CJ putting on the cape yesterday, man.
I was just fine with my Cs.
What was your confidence level after a half where they had punted on literally every possession?
Yeah.
Getting the ball back with 2 minutes and 50. And by the way, a half where they punted and a lot of it, again, was self-inflicted, silly stuff.
The biggest problem I have in watching a Texans game right now is the fear of imminent doom that there's going to be a flag on the play.
After a first down, I'm looking for flags all the time.
The first drive of the drive that we're talking about here at the end of the game, there was a flag on the ground.
Yeah.
And immediately you're like, oh!
Thank God it was on Jacksonville.
Yes.
But what was your, before we kind of go through this winning drive in some detail, what was your, do you recall what your confidence level was that CJ was going to be able to march down the field after not doing anything the whole second half?
My confidence in CJ never wavers.
Yeah.
My confidence had been bolstered by the performance of the defense.
Yeah.
So previously, I felt emotionally like, all right, this is where. So I would say a confidence level of 6, but an anticipation level of 8.
Okay.
Because I was like, all right, this is where I'm going to, right now, even though I feel like I couldn't possibly be happy, even if the Texans win this game. Look, you remember all the various very good teams in the NFL that haven't looked like they're firing at all. So the Patriots teams back in the day, it seemed like every other year for a while there, Tom Brady.
Yep.
He's done. Boy,
done.
He's shot.
They're
and
done.
Then they get it together. So that's where my anticipation level is pretty high, just knowing that, all right, man, it's still early in the season. Let's get this right.
Yeah, and I think CJ's made out of that same kind of stuff. I'm not saying he's Brady, but I'm saying he's of that ilk.
I don't even like saying his name when attaching to it, because really it would be the offensive line. It would be some of the pre-snap formation penalties by skill position players. It was all that stuff that's more frustrating.
So 9-play drive, 69 yards, and I thought this was masterfully done. And we'll get to the part I thought was most masterful here in a minute. First play of the drive is a C.J. Stroud 11-yard scramble from their 31. They get the 5 extra yards for illegal contact, which you talked about. That was the flag on the ground. So now all of a sudden, one play, and they're nearly at midfield. The next play, second play of the drive, first and 10, Houston 47. This is where I'm like, okay, I'm feeling something now.
Stroud takes the snap, fakes the give, throws downfield. Got a man, Nico, left side, 30, and brought down at the 27-yard line, tripped up by Miller. Big play to Nico. They're in range already with 2:35 to go.
Bingo, Vandy. They're in range already. That took them down to the Jacksonville. They got to the Jacksonville 27-yard line in about 15 seconds from their own 31-yard line. So that was That's my confidence level was sky high at that point.
You know, too, and then the name that kept creeping into my mind with Nico yesterday, but then especially on that drive, is Justin Jefferson. But that he's that guy that opposing fans are just saying, why? Why is he? What are you doing? How are you not bracketing him?
12
why
catches,
is he open? And you're going against a defense that's trying to play, you know, they're putting somebody on him, but they're playing in a loose shell and everything, so that's fine. Nico can eat underneath and turn what might be like a nice little possession reception by other receivers into something where it look, you know what it looks like also is Brandon Ayuk when they're on all, firing on all cylinders with the 49ers.
Yeah.
Can catch a ball 2 yards shy of the first down marker and then turn it into much more.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that was two plays in. You're already at their 27-yard line. Last play before the two-minute warning is a check down to Jari Ogunbowale for 6 yards on first down. Two-minute warning hits. So now you come out of the two-minute warning. It's second and four. You're at the Jacksonville 21. CJ hits Nico for 6 yards. They get the first down. Now the clock's ticking, and it's ticking, and it's ticking, and it's ticking, and it gets down to a minute 13, and they run a play on first down from the Jacksonville 16. It's a Dari Ogunbowale run up the middle for 6 yards.
Yeah.
I think that's important to note here. They were never in a down and distance worse than second and four this entire drive. I think that's worth noting because bad down and distances have been a theme with this team. So that forces the Jags to use their first timeout. The Jags had two timeouts left. This is the masterful part, I thought, here. I was sitting next to Patrick Creighton, and I can't remember, he was kind of scratching his head a little bit that CJ had been eating, and now they're running Dare. And I said, I think they're trying to get the Jags to empty their bag. They know, the Texans know they're going to at least go to overtime here.
Right, right, yeah, you're going to kick a field goal.
Yeah, at the worst case, you're going to overtime. So let's make sure the Jags empty their satchel of timeouts so that if you do hold the ball, they don't have a chance in the end to go down and get points. And I said to Patrick, I said, watch, they're going to run it again right here on second and four. Sure enough, they did. Dare up the middle for 1 yard. Jags have to burn that final timeout. So now the Jags are out over a plank clock management-wise. Third and three at the Jacksonville 8, and this is I love this. Dalton Schultz, this was a huge underrated play by Dalton Schultz on third and three.
Third down and three at the Jacksonville 8. Three receivers right, empty backfield. Here's the snap to CJ. Looking, firing, and caught by Schultz at the 5. Gets it up for the first down. He dives down inside the 2-yard line. 53 seconds to go. The Jags can't stop the clock, and the Texans have a first and goal.
That second effort because he got hit right at the marker,
and his knee was down when he caught the ball.
He kneeled down. Nobody touched him.
He had to get up off the knee before somebody hit him.
That extra effort to get those extra yards, A, guaranteed you the first down. B, got you a first and goal with the clock moving.
Yeah.
And C, got it down to the 2-yard line where I feel like this team, you know, if you're going to try to punch it into the end zone, better to be down at the 2 than at the 5, I would
say. Yeah, and that play, too, there were two plays the play before that was the Ogunbowale screen, or a couple before that.
Yeah, it was right before the two-minute warning.
The gravity of Stephon Diggs, and I think it was Stephon Diggs both times, it pulled the cornerback away from either a running back or a tight end.
Yeah,
it's like
huge.
That, you know, they just got them a little bit undisciplined in their zones.
Yeah,
and there you go.
Yep.
So that was, I mean, and CJ. To go back to the Ogunbowale, it wasn't a screen, it was a check down.
Yeah, check down.
Because he was wide open out in the flat, because the cornerback got pulled in by Stephon Diggs.
That's right.
And like that's exactly what you're hoping for. When you got all this wide receiving talent out there, does it open up opportunities for others? That's where I got excited about it, because man, all right, this is what it's supposed to look like. If the big three aren't eating, then yeah, you get meaningful yardage out of these other guys.
That was a huge play by Dalton Schultz. So the Texans take the clock down voluntarily down to 30 seconds. So there's 30 seconds left. Texans call a timeout. First and goal at the 2. CJ drops back. He's looking. Scrambles for a yard. Gets down to the 1-yard line. Texans call timeout with 22 seconds left. They don't have any timeouts anymore. So it's second and goal at the Jacksonville 1. Here it was.
Offset eye. CJ rolls out to the right, throws to the end zone. Hits Dare! And the Texans score! They lead! CJ Stroud to Dare Ogunbowale, who's had a huge game, puts the Texans on top.
This is what I really liked about that play. And CJ talked about it in the post game, how tempo doesn't always have to mean, you know, hurry up offense. Sometimes it's just getting up to the line quickly and doing all of that really well. And then he was talking about, then because get up to the line quickly, then you can take your time and figure out some things. This was the exact opposite. they got up to the line really quickly, snapped the ball immediately.
Yes, they did.
They're lined up in I after they'd been spread out. You know, you want to let CJ cook and spread everybody out? They did that on this drive. This one, they line up in I formation, come up to the line, snap the ball, and dupe them with the play action. And a gumbo, or dupe them with just the people being focused on stopping the run, because it wasn't even a play action play. It was perfect.
Fascinating part about them being lined up in I formation there,
yeah,
is that if they were to have run the ball and didn't get into the end zone, they have no timeouts.
Right. So Jacksonville should know that it's going to be passed.
They should know.
Yeah, they should know.
There's no way they're running it there.
But they were loaded up, ready to stop the run.
They were
linebackers
loaded.
Linebackers got sucked in.
Yeah, they loaded up, and you could tell that play was going to work from about a half a second after the ball was snapped.
Yeah, you could be right. As soon as you see CJ like rolling out.
He's got it.
Yeah.
He's got it. Yeah, Seth and I are watching it right now on Seth's computer. Sorry, audience. We're watching
because it wasn't like he was wide open or anything.
No, but you know CJ can make that throw.
And when I say it wasn't play action, I mean it wasn't. It was just by formation.
Yeah.
CJ does like a little ball fake to nobody, you know?
Yeah.
But it was just enough to get in what they needed.
Yeah.
And then I've said this about Pat Mahomes forever. Sometimes it's the quote-unquote easy throws where the ball is perfectly placed and thrown with touch on a five-yard pass, where sometimes quarterbacks are at their most impressive, because those are the things that guys like Trevor Lawrence screw up all the time.
Yeah.
But he just, CJ's got the presence of mind to just kind of float it to Ogunbowale, but not too slow, because that's where your non-superstars tend to screw up too, is if it's really, really easy.
Yeah.
Just in rhythm and boom, there you go.
Yeah, it was great. It was I can't say enough. It was a masterful drive. I thought the clock management was awesome. Not a single bad down and distance situation the whole time.
Yeah.
I thought CJ did a great job of just taking what the defense, you know, scrambling for 11 yards, checking down to Dare, hitting Schultz on third and three. And then the other message that clearly comes out of this drive is that when Joe Mixon's not available, they're giving the ball to Cam Akers 13 times, and they're letting J.J. Taylor get a few touches here and there. The guy they trust when Joe Mixon's not available is Dare Ogunbowale. That's the guy they trust when it comes down to nut cutting time.
Right. And, you know, one thing that Bobby Slowick has talked about, D'Amico Ryans has talked about, Nick Caserio, is that part of the first half of the season is kind of learning who you are. And that's what's really frustrating as a fan. But to go back to the Patriots, well, that's what the Patriots were really good at. There are a lot of times where the Patriots just didn't look like a championship caliber team in the first half of the season. Then they figure it out over the course of the first eight games. You know, the year they went to the Super Bowl against the Rams, they became, in the second half of the season, a run-heavy team.
Mm-hmm.
That's what was working for them that year. They became a team that ran the ball. But they didn't really figure it out until halfway through. Joe Mixon's presence, hopefully, next week, and the fact that the Bills showed that they are indeed mortal, that's changed my feelings over the course of the last 12 hours, more so
about this game?
Yeah, or at least however long it's been since the game was over.
Yeah.
I feel differently. It's a huge challenge. The Texans cannot ignore all these penalties and how there are some teams that are good but are heavily penalized. The way it feels with the Texans this year is that they just have a knack for having drive-killing penalties.
Yeah.
That's part of the... These are not penalties tacked on after you've already gotten the first down.
Right.
Things like that. These are really back-breaking penalties. That's the biggest thing holding them back.
They've played largely the same game in some ways the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is the Bears and the Jags, you're good enough to still beat those two teams.
Yeah.
You weren't good enough to beat the Vikings. And I'll tell you this, you're not good enough to beat the Bills if this is how you play.
Just, man, too, if teams are going to sit back and play cover two shells, that Nico Collins pass on the very first... You ask, what are the cover two beaters? Nico Collins.
Yeah.
He's got a guy trying to cover him up the seam. CJ throws it right between, like, they're in the honey hole there in the middle of cover two. And there's nothing they can do about it because it's Nico Collins.
It's great. Let's get to Nico and others and acknowledge me. We acknowledge big performance, big weekends, big stories from over the weekend. We do it every Monday at about this time. Acknowledge me. I will say a name, and Ben will play this.
Acknowledge me.
Roman Reigns, your tribal chief, saying acknowledge me. And then we will go through the process of acknowledging. There's a couple of Texans I want to make sure we get to. And the first one is indeed Nico Collins.
Acknowledge me!
Nico got in the end zone yesterday.
I'm third and goal. Here's the snap. Stroud looking. Stroud throwing back of the end zone. Touchdown, Nico Collins! as Houston goes in front of Jacksonville.
Nico was asked after the game, like, hey, man, these numbers you're piling up.
Yeah.
Because no receiver in the history of the Texans has been more prolific through four games of a season, through the first four games of a season, than Nico Collins. Andre Johnson, DeAndre Hopkins, none of them have put up the numbers Nico has in the first four games of any given season. Are these new numbers the standard for you, Nico?
Yeah, it is. I feel like my standard, man, just continue to be me. Continue to submerge in the deep end, you know, block out distractions, continue to be myself, continue to find the things I need to work on, which is everything. I feel there's always room for improvement on your game. So my mindset, man, don't get comfortable and continue to build, continue to take care of my body, continue to be available for the team, you know, and just let the rest be the rest, you know, let all the pieces fall in place.
It's getting easier and easier to make some comparisons between Nico Collins and Andre Johnson. Obviously, there are differences.
Sure.
And it's almost unfair to either guy to make that comparison. But the size, Nico's a tall guy. He's not as thick as Andre was. But I think the thing that I like most, if I'm going to draw comparisons, is that Nico's much, much more of an extroverted personality. But there's a stoic nature to the way he goes about his business. I mean, he just like Andre, is just all about showing up and doing your job.
Yeah.
You know, without drama, there was no contract drama. Maybe they redo his. If he keeps playing this this way, I'm guessing they redo his deal before it's up, but I'd be surprised if Nico were publicly agitating.
I'd be shocked.
Or playing it out on social media or something
shocked,
like that.
Yes.
I think it might be a team-initiated thing at some point if he keeps this up, but I don't. I anticipate zero drama with Nico Collins. He's just not that kind of guy. We talk about veteran leadership on the team. Oh, this is the point that I wanted to give credit to Jason Bristol for last night, but I got sidetracked. It's a young team in a lot of respects, but they do have a lot of veteran leaders. That's what's frustrating.
Yeah.
They got a lot of old guys on this team.
They do.
So you got to really put pressure. Nico's one of the younger players who I think leads by example better than anybody.
He
just shows up and does his job.
Dude, and you ask anybody about Nico that's not Nico on the team, and that's the first thing they bring up is his work ethic. Dari did when we asked him about it on the postgame show
yesterday. The only thing that could rattle my confidence right now is if Nico Collins showed up and started referring to himself in the third person.
Yeah, you know, tweeting out rap lyrics.
But not just rap lyrics, but cryptic rap lyrics.
Rap lyrics
are fine, Sean.
Yeah. Cryptic rap lyrics.
What did I say when they showed 50 Cent on there? I said, like, because, you know, we talk about whether we should say 50 Cent or 50 Cent.
Yeah, yeah.
We feel like we're way too middle-aged to say 50 Cent.
I say 50.
You're middle-aged enough that you should be saying 4 bits. You're, yeah.
Sixpence.
There's one of those musical artists there that talks instead of singing. I think his name is 4 bits.
I think his name is Sawbuck.
Yeah.
All right. Kalen Bullock.
Acknowledge
Hustle
me.
Play of the year. Here's Tank Bigsby's 58-yard run that, thanks to Kalen Bullock, was not a 62-yard touchdown run.
Trevor with signals. Hand off Bigsby straight ahead. First down and more. 50, 45. He's on the move. Right side. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5 to the pylon. And they're going to say he stepped out of bounds inside the 5-yard line. What a call. Bigsby shot out of a cannon. Gets the Jags a first and goal.
All right, so he got knocked out by Kalen Bullock at the 4-yard line, and chasing.
My initial thought on that was, all right, okay, that was an awesome play and incredible athleticism by Kalen Bullock, but was he out of position? Is that why he had to? Because he is the safety.
Yeah.
You go back and you watch that, and the Texans are aligned in this alignment that a lot of teams do and the Texans have done, but usually you've got both defensive tackles lined up on the same side of the ball. It's fundamentally unsound if you were to play that way. Usually you either blitz or the defensive tackle slants back to the other side of the ball at the snap. The Texans did neither of those things.
Yeah.
So they end up with a linebacker as your three technique, basically.
Yep.
And it was just a wide open game. I don't know if it was a mental error. I hope to God on 3rd and 3 that wasn't the design of the play, because you're just inviting them to run on you, not just for the first down, but for more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Kalen Bullock he saved the game right there.
He saved the game.
It was enough that, man, the juice from that play seems to have carried over to their goal line stand.
I agree with you. After that play, I'll repeat that according to my calculations, the Jags ran 16 plays after that Bigsby run. They gained a total of 21 yards the rest of the game. So here was D'Amico Ryans on Kalen Bullock's hustle play to save a touchdown.
Yeah, one thing our defense stands on is effort, and There's no better play that exhibits that effort than Kalen, right, giving us a blade of grass to stand on. So Kalen's effort to run him down and get a stop and for us to regroup after such a huge play, for us to regroup and then be able to get a stop there in the red zone, that was, I mean, that's a big turning point in the game.
Yeah.
So, and that shows what effort means. And if you play the game the right way with that type of effort, it can put you in position to be on the winning side. So proud of Kalen for his effort.
I would be, if I were in Jacksonville and if I knew the Texans very well, I would say, why are you guys spreading it out on the goal line when the Texans only have two linebackers that they trust right now?
Yeah,
because they spread it out and the Texans were able to just play their... They were not in goal line defense because that's not what the personnel demanded. No. And the defensive tackles, to their credit, and it was multiple defensive tackles. It wasn't just the starters. In the fourth quarter, Khalil Davis had a nice play. Tim Settle had a really nice play. Foley Fatakasu had a really nice play. Henry Toa came up on second and two and made shucked. Henry Toa shed an offensive lineman like he was an actual three technique defensive tackle.
Toa's been good this year so far.
And so that was just good, fundamentally sound play by the front seven on the goal line, not even in their goal line defense. That was great. That was really, it was a lot of the stuff that had been missing earlier in the game and this year, where that final couple drives by the Texans made me feel a lot better about a lot of things.
Yep.
And Kalen Bullock's just made it the rest. He is Swarm.
He is Swarm.
He's likely going to be in the Circle of Swarm.
We may hear his name on Friday
right.
for the Circle of
yes.
Swarm. Foreshadowing.
The Instagram OTs will not be in the
they
Circle
will not,
of Swarm.
They will not. And now,
nobody
and
with red
never.
Gloves, no red nope. gloved offensive lineman can be in the Circle of Swarm because you're putting your IG photos ahead of the team when you wear bright colored gloves as an offensive lineman.
All right, let's keep it moving. Joe Flacco.
Acknowledge me.
Wreaking havoc with another fan base's psyche, hopefully. Joe Flacco came in for, stop me if you've heard this before, an injured Anthony Richardson. By the way, Anthony Richardson goes out of the Colts game. Colts beat the Steelers, by the way, 27-24. So the Steelers fall from the ranks of the undefeated. Anthony Richardson goes out with a hip injury. They bring him back in and immediately run a QB run. Like, they immediately just throw his body back
right.
in complete peril.
Yeah.
Very first play. He gets knocked out again for the rest of the game. Now, here's why Flacco's getting acknowledged. 16 of 26, 168, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. This looks like a lot like the Joe Flacco that had Cleveland's fan base wanting to build around Joe Flacco.
Yes, and at one point during the game, we were sitting in the post-game studio, and we couldn't tell. I'm sure this has probably already been it's all over social media. There was some incidents with Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston yelled at an offensive lineman.
Yelling at an O-lineman, and that's kind of died down. I haven't seen much about it since
right,
then.
Yeah, it was weird. And then Deshaun went up to kind of like
calm the guy down.
Calm the offensive lineman down.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of drama potentially in Cleveland with where Joe Flacco used to be. But as far as the Colts, the one downside of this, I guess, we won't play the sounder, but I'll acknowledge Anthony Richardson for breaking the 50% completion mark.
He's 3 out of 4.
He was 3 for 4. Yeah. I feel like they're gaming the system a little bit in that they came in and immediately ran the ball. They didn't put him in any peril of
cracking the below 50% barrier.
Yeah, they might have called nothing but runs just to keep him at 75%.
Because they know that you're tracking this.
Yeah. There's
nobody's tracking this closer than you.
They want to be able to point to some level of success. I was devastated to find out that he had finished with 75% completions.
Now you've got to walk around doing that annoying thing where you're like, you know, Anthony Richardson hasn't thrown for greater than 50%. With a minimum of 5 attempts.
It's okay because what soothes me is I know I'm going to see a bunch of Colts fans claiming that Anthony Richardson isn't injury prone this week.
No,
you got to look into
that's the salve
injuries.
On the wound.
He's not actually injury prone. All right.
All right. I said I'd acknowledge a former Texans head coach. Podcast Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
Acknowledge me.
Bill O'Brien was on Julian Edelman's podcast, and I've seen probably five. I haven't watched the whole thing. I've probably seen 5 clips from this thing. They're all either very entertaining or very informative. He's a really good podcast guest, which shouldn't surprise me because he used to come on the afternoon show with us every now and then. John McClain, back when McClain and O'Brien were seeing eye to eye, he would be able to call up Bill and say, hey, you want to come on the afternoon show? And he would, and he was always a great guest. Like, he's an excellent storyteller.
No, he really is. Bill O'Brien is a very complex human being.
Yeah.
There's many, many facets to Bill O'Brien.
Doing a good job at BC right now.
Yeah.
BC is, he's done much better than people thought he would be.
Is he good enough to go be the antidote for what ails Cleveland? That's
the one guy that got something out of Deshaun.
Yeah, you're married to Deshaun for a little while. Yeah. And yeah, well, it's Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly.
I don't know, honestly, you know, this sounds weird. I don't know that he seems really happy at Boston College.
I think, man. Bill O'Brien also, because of, he's got the situation with his son is, I think, can be very taxing in a lot of ways, understandably.
Yeah.
And they're both
got a special
their
needs
families
son.
There
yeah.
and everything.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe he's coming to his own. Maybe he ends up being like a beloved figure at BC.
Here was O'Brien on, he is so far, yeah. I can tell you that. O'Brien, this is a story he told about Rob Gronkowski on the Edelman podcast.
I told this story about Gronk the other day. Gronk was a rookie, and Bill would come in on Wednesdays sometimes, and he would test the team.
Quiz us.
And as assistant coaches, you had a 7:30 meeting, so you would alert these guys like, hey, man, you better know your stuff because he's going to test you. And these guys would all be like, oh, my God. They'd be looking at the punter's range and averages and stuff. And let's say we're playing the Jets or whatever. And so he goes, all right, Gronkowski, who's the Mike linebacker? And Gronk had his scout book, like, between his feet. And so he looked at Bill, and he looked down, and he was moving the pages of his phone. And Bill goes, Jesus Christ, Gronk. And the whole team started laughing.
It's a good, the clips I've seen from that podcast are excellent. That's it's a really fun interview.
Yeah, you know, I love that image of Gronk, like, such a meathead that he can't
feet.
Even like, you know, in college I didn't have to cheat. I didn't even have to work at cheating.
Oh,
they just said, you know, they would just send somebody in to take my tests for
so
me.
So funny.
That brought me back, though, because you'll hear so many great players from the Patriots talk about how nervous you'd be in meetings.
Yeah.
And it is, man, no matter how tough you are, who you think you are, unless you're kind of just like wired really differently like Gronk, you get in a hierarchical environment where there's a authority figure at the top, you still get that same feeling you did when you were in middle school.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're not prepared for a test or you got a teacher or something. You think you're a big bag tough guy, but when the teacher calls you out, there's something that there's butterflies that turn in your stomach.
Dude.
Unless you're Gronkowski or I get Mike Vrabel is another guy that was the opposite, was super sharp, but would like seemed unfazed by Bill O'Brien, would go back and forth with
him. Oh, by Belichick, you mean?
With Belichick. Yeah, we kind of take shots at Belichick.
That's great.
Edelman talks about how nervous he used to get with Belichick.
I can see that, man. All right, last one. This is a little self-grand. I'm kind of propping myself up here.
Do it, Sean.
Sean Stradamus.
Acknowledge me!
Yeah, that's me. This was me back on July the 6th. Out in the outfield patio at Target Field after the day after the Twins beamed Altuve up near his head, and all the Twin fans sitting near me all cheered for it.
Right, right.
I put out a video chastising them, which went viral. The very next day, I went to the game. They lose 9-3, the Astros. Hunter Brown got shelled. But I could tell, even in the midst of a 9-3 win, this is not a good baseball team, these Minnesota Twins. Even though they were on pace for 92 wins at the time, after the 9-3 loss by the Astros, I said this on my eighth beer.
I've watched championship baseball. I'm really happy for you guys that you won 9-3 today. That is not a championship-level team. Y'all are the Ratchet Brewers, okay? That's what you are. You're an 84-win team that's going to get knocked out in the wild card round. Now and forever, that's all you are. Not worried about you in the ALCS, okay?
Not worried about you in the ALCS. The final standings are in, and the Minnesota Twins, turns out I gave them way too much credit.
Yeah.
82-80 they finished the
season. Yeah, you were kind of trying to be charitable in that and saying 84
wins. Saturday was so fun.
Yeah, I know you did. You got petty. You got petty as hell.
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah. You had all the receipts, and you were tweeting people.
That's funny, because people were like, I see, boy, you really kept all those receipts. I'm like, no. I went to the video I made and just looked at everybody who replied to it. That's all you have to do.
Plus, even if you did keep receipts, I think sometimes it's a tell of how lazy they are. Like, yeah, I didn't have to consult a team of accountants to go back and dig through these things, you know? It's a button on my phone. Oh, that's how obsessed you are, huh? Like,
the video. I didn't want to play the whole video just because it's too long. But I did a video on Saturday, and I let in as, like, condolences. Like, somebody died last night, and I was really downtrodden. And after about 30 seconds, I just started cracking up, saying, the Minnesota Twins playoff chances. I had so many people come up to me at the pregame show yesterday. They're like, dude, I was all ready to go to text you, I'm really sorry for your loss.
A lot of people thought it was me.
It's
because I'd gotten my, because especially with Devena, when they saw it, I had my accident this weekend where my face was all bloody. So people saw
that.
Can
we acknowledge Seth for surviving that traumatic incident at the airport on Saturday?
I might be concussed right this moment. We don't.
Well, you're having a hell of a show.
It wasn't at the airport. It was at Greenway Plaza.
Oh, it was right here?
It was in the Edwards Cinema building. I was walking over to Chipotle.
Oh, my goodness.
I was walking out through the exit. But there was like the traffic was kind of weird. There was a whole weird. So I kind of
was at the airport.
So I was walking out where they have the gate, And somebody was there was a car that was leaving, and I walked out behind this car as it was exiting because I wanted to take as efficient a route to Chipotle
as
possible.
Sure.
And I didn't have my phone out, stone cold sober, without realizing I didn't know what was at the arm. The barrier arm came down on my head.
Yes,
and I was
dude,
like,
that could have been so much worse.
Yeah, my face was bleeding, and I didn't know if I had a concussion or not. That was the hardest hit I've taken to the head since playing football.
Wow.
And
did you still go get a burrito?
Of course I did. I walked into Chipotle, and I should have gotten this woman's name.
With the crimson mask.
But again, I did. I walked in, and I'm like, and the thing is, where that Chipotle is, like, they get a lot. I'd say probably once a day they get some dude walking in there with blood on his face, wanting to use the bathroom, and I'm like, I gotta look as upright a citizen as possible as I walk into this Chipotle with blood on my face.
Oh my god, dude!
But the girl at the counter couldn't have been more nurturing.
Really?
Oh my god!
Like a Florence Nightingale making a burrito.
She's like, you're gonna eat this here, right? You should sit down, and I'll check on you if you need.
Wow.
After I cleaned up my face, but yeah.
Florence Nightingale
effect. I didn't get her name, and that's how I know I was concussed.
Well, you'll be back at Chipotle at some point this week, I'm sure.
No memory of what she looks like or anything. I'm not actually sure.
It'll trigger in your brain. You'll remember. All right. That was Acknowledge Me. We enjoy that, doing that each and every week. Hey, Sunday Night Football last night. How are we feeling about the version of the Bills we're going to get after they were run off the field last night by the Ravens? We'll start taking our first peek ahead to Week 5. That's coming up next.
The Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
Okay, Seth just told the story in the previous segment. We're going to hand things over to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris at the top of the hour. Seth just told his story about how the parking garage gateway arm of the parking garage across the street from our station, which is the parking garage for a big movie theater.
Here. It was it's called a barrier arm.
I know this
because I had to Google it when I tried to explain to my wife what had just happened.
When it nearly decapitated
I was going to text her, and I didn't want her to be, if I had called her, she might have been more alarmed. So I was like, okay, how do I explain this without her being, as I also sent her a picture of my bloody face.
Right. Okay. So you were walking over to Chipotle to go get some lunch or whatever the case may be. And you, when you walked into Chipotle, you had blood dripping down your face, but the woman behind the counter, the burrito artiste behind the counter,
the baritista,
she was remarkably calming and soothing to you, more so than you thought you would be. Someone on a text page said her name was Florence Nightingale. It's so stupid.
What if she had? It turns out it's an old Mexican folk medicine treatment to pack it with guacamole. I'm down there on the floor of the Chipotle. They're packing my face with guacamole. There was something extra soothing about it that she was Hispanic. I don't know what it was, but like she spoke with a little bit of an accent.
Oh, see, I wish
like, oh my gosh.
Save that for tomorrow when Lopez is here for the toss.
I don't know what it was. It's a positive stereotype, I suppose. I don't know what it was, but it felt extra soothing because she was Hispanic and she had an Hispanic accent, and it felt extra nice that she was like nurturing me.
Just picturing you stumbling into Chipotle with a crimson mask going, I'll take double rice, double steak.
I hadn't ordered ahead. I had to go.
Sour cream.
No. I went to the bathroom and I was like, please, I hope this isn't locked right now. I hope I don't have to go up and ask for the key or something.
Yeah.
And it was actually pretty, it's a nice, the Richmond Chipotle, Richmond Wesleyan, had a nice clean bathroom with plenty of paper towels and sanitizer.
Yeah, that's
which
big.
Which hurt, but I slapped it. I cleaned it off, and I slapped some alcohol on there.
You had a Band-Aid on there yesterday, but now it's...
Now it's just
it's healing good, man.
I'm nervous because you got your, you know, you get these infections these days. Yes. So I cleaned the hell out of it.
Yeah, that's smart. That was smart. Yeah, I got to go back for my checkup today on my elbow. It's getting better.
Yeah, no, you're like
it's getting better. It still hurts to lean it on the table.
I still feel like if it doesn't get better in 2 days, you should amputate it.
The whole like just
your
from
arm.
The elbow, the whole
yeah,
arm?
Just from the
shoulder
elbow down.
Or elbow down?
Just from the elbow down.
Okay, yeah.
You got to make sacrifices in this world,
I
Chuck.
I can see that. Yeah,
I had to start my live stream late because of my bloody face.
Same thing. I can amputate my arm. You start your live stream late.
Yeah.
It's the same genre. Were you rooting for any particular outcome with the Bills and the Ravens last night?
Yes.
Based on the Bills coming here this weekend?
I wanted exactly what happened to happen. And
they got smoked.
Yeah, right.
Run off the field.
I wanted a reminder that, okay, no team in the NFL is infallible. On any given Sunday, you can win. But let's, A, just for the emotional benefit of us fans, but then I think, B, also, it's nice for the Texans to see, I don't want to call it a blueprint, but to have some of the weaknesses exposed. And then especially, look, Derrick Henry running for, was it 199 yards?
199.
199 yeah. yards.
87 yards on his first carry.
We got a little tease of Joe Mixon coming back. We thought Joe Mixon might have come back this past week. Now I'll be surprised if he's not back for this Bills game.
That's what I wanted to ask you, because offensively, yeah, they pounded the Bills.
Yeah.
Defensively, they were chasing Josh Allen all over the field, forcing mm-hmm. him into some bad decisions, running all over the place. I mean, he was bedraggled by the end of that game. And that's what I know we got all week to talk about this, but we're talking about it right now. Like, how much of what the Ravens do and did to the Bills last night even applies to the Houston
right,
Texans?
Right, yeah, defensively, they don't
operate completely
on the
different
same
offensive
level. No.
Teams.
I think that's one of the things that has been a little bit of a letdown is that the pass rush, despite the Texans having a bunch of sacks going into yesterday's game, it hasn't been as menacing a pass rush as the sack total would suggest.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was just because of the one huge game where they
Bears.
Had seven sacks versus the Bears. So when you look at, and I know these next-gen stats show that Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson have as many. Those next-gen stats are garbage when it comes to pressures.
Okay.
They just measure, I think it's based on GPS and how close you get to a quarterback. There is another level to unlock with the pass rush, and I think some of it is that the Texans are they're trying to play with a disciplined pass rush and squeeze the pocket, which is good, but there does also sometimes need to be like, all right, no, you just get deep into the backfield as much as possible, and then the defensive tackles need to be responsible for if Danielle Hunter flushes the quarterback, then somebody else pick up the scraps. They can be better as pass rushers. Yesterday, the pass rush could have been better.
They were quiet yesterday.
Versus some bad offensive tackles.
Trevor Lawrence got hit three times the whole game. Their only sack was Eric Murray coming off the edge.
Yeah.
Should have acknowledged Eric Murray. Hey, Ben, real quick.
Well,
No.
Acknowledge me.
He had the corner blitz sack, and he had the pass breakup that got the ball back.
Right. Here's where I am with Eric Murray and Jalen Petrie right now. Like Jalen Petrie especially. I think Jalen Petrie is kind of indicative of where the team is as a whole. Jalen Petrie does some things really, really well, but Jalen Petrie is not good in man coverage. This is my concern going back to training camp. Was I don't want to call him a slot corner because he's not. And when he's tasked with covering the slot and man, nope, that's not who he is. He's more of a tiny linebacker, and he's really good at that part of his job. But they got to start figuring out ways. And Christian Harris coming back, I think, can help in that regard.
And the Toa Toa looks like a real NFL linebacker.
Yeah, yeah.
Too, you know?
Toa Toa is just a night and day.
You got three guys you can
year.
Put out there.
So there's a. I'm not panicking over it. It's just they've got to figure some things out in coverage to cover up Jalen Petrie's weaknesses because he's not a cornerback playing nickelback. It's just there's weaknesses there because he made some great plays yesterday too.
Yeah,
you know, like there's certain things he can and cannot do.
Christian Harris could be back this week. We're 4 weeks in.
Yeah,
that's the window. So we'll see what happens with that. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. We are done. We are out of time. John Harris and Mark Vandermeer, it is a Texans Monday here on Sports Radio 610. They are up next. We'll see you tomorrow.